J&M, how may I help?
Polly, you're not going to believe what we just got in the office.
Betty Sue, you tell me and you tell me right now.
An IP-hosted PBX that is customizable to our needs.
What will they think of next? That's so swell.
And it's affordable.
That's so neat. You sure are lucky, Betty Sue. We're still stuck in the past.
Times have changed. So should your PBX. Get Virto from Voxer Iron, a hosted IP PBX solution for your business that offers fantastic savings. Available from 65 Rand per user per month. For more info, SMS your name to 45678.
And we'll call you.
Welcome to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by South Africa's technology news leader at techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan McLeod and I'm here with Craig Wilson. How's it, Craig?
Hi, Duncan.
So it's the quiet week before Christmas.
It is, although not as quiet as we'd expected.
No, it's actually been quite busy around Joburg as well, haven't you found?
Yeah, oddly. Perhaps everyone, it's the global economic downturn keeping people in town.
Yeah, and I saw Rupert Bryan from Web Africa actually tweeted that Cape Town is quieter than usual. So I think a lot of people have decided, and the new term I've been hearing this year is staycation.
Staycation, yes, that's very good.
I think a lot of people have decided to stay in Joburg, which is unfortunate because I love this place when it empties out.
Yeah, it's the best part of the year.
That's why I always stay in Johannesburg at this time of year and take leave Feb, March or April.
Right.
Usually. Anyway, we've got a bumper show coming up. We're gonna cover a couple of weeks worth of news since we haven't been here for a couple of weeks. We're gonna look at specifically issues around spectrum, which has really been the big issue in the last little while or so. And then in the second half of the show, Craig and I are going to talk about our gadgets of the year, the gadgets that came across our desks, which we were really impressed with. We're of course going to talk about the iPhone 4S and play around a bit with Siri live on the show. But stay tuned for that. We're going to talk about our favorite laptops, music players, we're going to talk about ultrabooks, etc., etc. So if you're still looking for gadget gift ideas, then
and willing to brave the madness that is the shops at this time of year.
Yes, indeed. Although it's probably still time Wednesday to order your products online, but probably getting quite close to that cutoff point, isn't it?
That's true, yeah.
Right. Well, Craig, let's delve straight into it. The big news, of course, coming out of ICASA last week, there's the so-called making available the so-called high-demand spectrum bands in the 800 and 2.6 gigahertz frequencies. The telecommunications industry has been waiting a long time for clarity on how this is going to operate. ICASA seems to be steering away now from the whole idea of going to an auction, which I think is
indeed
a good thing. Because if there was an auction for a limited amount of spectrum, the operators would have simply pushed up the price to such an extent that they would have had to end up passing on the cost of bidding for that spectrum onto you and me.
Indeed, and then it gives no one else a chance because only the big players can really compete in any sort of auction.
Now, there's so much that came out of the document that the discussion document, or what did they call it, draft plan. Last week, but I think let's touch on a few of the highlights. I think the most interesting for me was the fact that they're first of all want to encourage new competitors to come in to use the 2.6 gigahertz spectrum, which is particularly well suited for urban settings. And they specifically said that that's going to be made available to two licensees who do not currently have access to any what they call IMT or mobile spectrum. So that immediately precludes Telkom, Cell C, Vodacom and MTN from bidding. Now, I'm really interested to see who comes in and bids for the spectrum. I think we may see some internet service providers bidding for it, like Internet Solutions and MWeb.
I imagine, yeah, the internet service providers have got to be the ones in the first sort of choices looking at it. And then it's also appealing for potentially for another international player to come into the market and offer some real competition.
Indeed, and we know Orange, the subsidiary of France Telecom, has been poking around this market. The rumours were they were in talks a while ago to buy Business Connection.
Indeed.
There were some rumours quite some time ago now that they were also having exploratory discussions with Cell C shareholders. That, I must emphasise, was just rumour. But certainly Orange does seem to be keen to come into this market. They've been enforcing their trademarks here.
They have, yeah.
If you ask Orange Inc., the technology PR company, they had rather a nasty battle with Orange over their trademarks. I understand they won that case. Well, they must have, because they're continuing to use the Orange Inc. trademark. But I see recently that on one of the tech news sites that there was another company in Cape Town that was sued by them over alleged trademark infringement. But anyway, I'm digressing. Let's talk about spectrum. So two new players in the 2.6 gigahertz, 2.6 gigahertz band. And then, interestingly, ICASA is really trying to encourage spectrum sharing and infrastructure sharing by promoting the idea of companies that get both access to both 800 and 2.6 gigahertz frequencies to only be allowed to play in the wholesale space. So I think what they're trying to do, and in fact what I know they're trying to do, is they're trying to emulate an interesting model that Russia has come up with.
Right, but with YOTA.
YOTA, yeah. YOTA is a big operator in Russia, and in May, I think it was in May this year, YOTA signed an agreement with the four biggest mobile operators in Russia to build a wholesale LTE network on their behalf.
Right.
Using the limited spectrum available in the 800 and 2.6 gigahertz bands. It's an interesting model. It's got risks, I think, because there is the possibility that the incumbent operators could try and collude.
Yeah. Yeah. Price fixing is always a worry when there's one wholesaler.
Yeah. Although it will be, as I pointed out in our column this week, it'll be a lot harder if the country does get investors for this 2.6 gigahertz band. Certainly, be harder for them to collude in urban areas.
Indeed. Oh, even if some of the entrants, I mean, from the ISPs and so on, they don't have a history in the space and. Perhaps they could be expected to help keep a check on price fixing and so on too. Or of course they could just be welcomed into the fold. So perhaps international players are our best bet there. But I think it's really interesting too that ICASA has offered grouped things together with bits of spectrum in the 800 and the 2.6 bands and sort of pushing them as packages together, as if the importance of covering rural and urban areas, rather than the more lucrative and generally more popular urban coverage that 2.6 provides.
Yes.
It's a really interesting move that they've opted to sort of bundle them together and force players, as I'm sure we're going to come to too. There's the talk of the enormous obligations for those who do get access to this new spectrum in terms of the coverage targets they need to meet within allotted timelines. And ICASA is clearly hoping that this approach will encourage people to provide more rural coverage, which is something that we certainly could do with a fair sight more of.
Yeah, and certainly I know Peter Ace from Vodacom has been punting this idea specifically in the rural areas of infrastructure sharing and going into those areas because of the fact that if the networks were to duplicate infrastructure in those areas, it would just be more expensive to provide services, and potentially if the operators were to share infrastructure in those areas, they could offer access to rural consumers at prices they can afford. So I think ICASA, I mean, I've read through the document, I've read through the subsequent government gazette that was published, which goes into a lot more detail through the invitation to apply, etc. And I think generally ICASA has produced a very sober, well thought out document here. Obviously, there will be the operators will have issues with aspects of it, and that's fair enough. There's going to be public hearings early next year. It's going to be quite fascinating to see what they object to and some of the issues they put on the table. I think kudos to ICASA for at least putting, as I said, a sober document on the table that could really have a big impact on the telecommunications industry in South Africa.
Indeed, and the thought is that firstly, at least they're moving and doing something and moving in the right direction. And secondly, that there's a lot of sort of bold assertions in it, and a lot of people have been surprised by some of it. But it's nice to see ICASA taking the lead and taking a stance, a fairly well-defined one, although obviously when the discussions are had at the end of January and throughout early next year, I think some of the aspects of it that are a bit vague at the moment will become a bit clearer.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. The big question, of course, is the 800 megahertz band is still being used for analog broadcasts.
Indeed.
The question is, will the broadcasters get out of that band in time? They're supposed to be out of there by December 2013. Broadcasters say there's a snowball's chance in hell of that happening.
Yes.
The ITU has set down a deadline of mid-2015, after which they won't protect our frequencies from interference from neighbouring countries. I think generally it's a positive move. Just lastly on the issue of this high demand spectrum, Craig, you've had a look at something they've raised or ICASA has raised in this document, in this draft document, and that's the issue of something called spectrum parks, which neither of us had heard of before last week.
No, indeed. And in fact, the only example I could find of it having been used elsewhere was in New Zealand. And I'm not entirely clear on it because ICASA has provided very little detail about what it actually entails. But it seems to be the suggestion is for example, that if one operator has a particular portion of spectrum for the entire country, it's often quite wasteful because it may only use it in certain provinces or certain regions, but it's given the sole mandate to use it. And the problem with that is that, you know, then you have spectrum that is essentially lying fallow for other regions that could be using it. So part of it is that a portion of spectrum is allocated for general use on a first-come, first-served basis, but that it can be used, the same spectrum can be used in different regions, assuming there's no overlap. And the idea is that, I from what I can gather, is that it's to try and, you know, eke out the maximum usage possible from a particular chunk of spectrum, and also at the same time allow all sorts of different players to work with it. We'll have to wait and see how exactly it plays out and what exactly ICASA, how it chooses to define these spectrum parks. But again, I find it encouraging, really, that ICASA is looking at
new models,
sort of non-traditional models, and you know, I think that bodes really well for SA's telecoms future.
Yeah, great. Well, let's move on a slightly related topic. Alan Loughcraig has been in the headlines in the last couple of weeks. The rumor is that he may be involved in some sort of deal with Cell C. I spoke to him last week. Was it last week or the week before now? And he said he signed no deals yet, but didn't specifically say whether he was in discussions with Cell C.
Indeed.
There have been reports suggesting that he's keen to become the CEO. I've subsequently heard that that may not in fact be the case, that he may get involved as an investor and possibly as the group's chairman or some similar sort of role.
Indeed.
But certainly Alan Loughcraig, I think most of our listeners will know who he is, the founding CEO of Vodacom. And left, what was it, about 2 years ago now, 2 or 3 years ago now, and he's been operating under a restraint of trade from Vodacom, for which he was paid quite handsomely. That restraint of trade ends in, I think, at the end of, is it end of March, I think, yes. So his restraints will be lifted by the 1st of April, and he has indicated that he is keen to get back into the telecommunications industry in a senior role, and yeah, Cell C is one option, I guess, since they currently don't have a CEO.
And are shopping for one,
if he's interested in that position. I think he would certainly add to the dynamism of this industry if he was to take on the third largest mobile player and compete with the company that he helped build up, namely Vodacom.
And Cell C, I mean, also Cell C is clearly looking around, but it's going to be difficult. You know, Lars Reifeldt, the outgoing or the gone now Cell C CEO, left quite an impression and made quite an impact while he was there, and was instrumental in the, you know, reduction of the data pricing. And, you know, whoever replaces him is going to have some sizable shoes to fill.
Yes, for sure. What else? We wanted to have a brief chat about DStv and the fact that they've launched Box Office Online. I think many of you know that they've had the DStv Box Office on their PVR decoders for a couple of months now, where they trickle feed down content onto your PVR's hard drive, and you can then subscribe to a movie. I forget the price. I think it's 25 rand or something like that.
Thereabouts. But you only have a choice of 15, if I recall.
15 movies, that's right.
Because of the limits of what can be stored on the PVR without impacting the service.
Now, they've launched their online offering in the shape of a beta. They're only taking on 1,000 beta users in the first in December, and I think another 1,000 in January.
That's right, yeah.
But interesting move. You can only do it on your PC for now, or on your Mac computer.
And do you require a dedicated client to do it too? It's not browser-based yet, although they have said that it will be next year.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that they eventually want to have apps for it, so you can do it on your iPad and all that sort of thing.
Indeed. It's just nice to see them testing it. But also, in fairness, it's not really a surprise. I think DStv has to move quickly in this space, because with even the likes of Telkom talking about getting into the video on demand space,
yes,
DStv is going to have to leverage its sort of existing dominance in this sort of pay TV arena. Because otherwise it's very easy, as Netflix has shown in the US, for another service to come along and become dominant really, really quickly.
Yeah, so 33 rand a movie does seem a bit excessive, though, for the online service.
It does, yeah. And they did say that was test pricing, and that it is subject to revision when the service actually launches commercially. I believe they're planning to launch it properly to the public by the end of March, hopefully before, if they're ready. But Yeah, and during this testing phase, it's going to be interesting to see what people have to say about it. And, you know, the other problem with all of these video on demand services, which none of the actual service providers themselves can do anything about, is simply the cost of data. I mean, you know, they were saying that an average movie, because obviously at this point it's all SD content because of the data limitations most South Africans face, the SD movies are, say, 650 to 750 megs a movie.
Yeah.
And as we said, you know, unless you're on an uncapped offering, that's just really not an option. You know, if you're paying whatever it is you pay for 3 or 5 gigs a month, when you do the maths and you're paying 33 rand on top of it for the privilege of getting it, it's just not a viable option, unfortunately.
Well, at least we're getting more insight into why MWeb, which is owned by MultiChoice, of course, decided to launch uncapped products last year. It's all part of a grand strategy.
The dots are beginning to join, aren't they?
Yes. Indeed. Anything else on box office before we move on?
No. I think that while we're on the topic of DStv, I wanted to talk a little bit about some of their mobile offerings they've worked on this year. We've had Drifter and the Drifter,
and they've just launched the Walker device, which is like a little baby tablet with just a screen.
Looks a bit like a GPS or a
yes.
But with just a screen and an antenna.
Yes, indeed.
But DStv just being aggressive this year and rolling out new products and really trying to cement their position.
I think 2012 is really going to be the story of the year of video on demand in South Africa, because we're going to see Telkom coming out with their offerings, whoever they decide to partner with. There are rumors that Apple is coming into this market, that Microsoft is coming into this market through Xbox Live with various offerings. Xbox Live is already offering Netflix in the US. I know for a fact that I can't really give any details at this stage, but I know that there are local players putting in Rackspace specifically to allow these international guys to come into this market and offer
Video on demand with sort of local caching, so that you're not having to get it from overseas servers. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, and we also know that Telkom is looking to increase line speeds across the board.
Indeed, and that's going to have a big impact as well. So hopefully we'll start to see that rolling out from next year. I think they're looking to start piloting that in the first quarter. So,
and that combined with LTE, I mean, really at the moment, a lot of the obstacles are just bandwidth.
Indeed.
And as those become less of a problem, we're going to see the space explode.
For sure. Good. And then just lastly, before we move on and talk about all the geeky stuff and gadgets and the stuff we've been playing with this year, just a quick mention about Yahoo. Which has taken the wraps off its South African portal. Craig, you did that story. It's all rather underwhelming, isn't it?
It really is, unfortunately. It's one of those, particularly speaking to other people in the industry, both at the launch event and subsequently, the general consensus was, well, on the one hand, isn't it 10 years too late? And on the other, what's the unique value that this Yahoo portal is offering that you can't get elsewhere? And, you know, the more I've dug around in it, the more I've looked at it, and the more I've tried the service, the more underwhelmed I am, frankly. You know, Yahoo, what they're doing is they're syndicating local news content and local sports news. And all of it's coming from existing sources, the likes of, you know, the Daily Maverick and... I forget if it was News 24 or not, but, you know, those sorts of news sites. So, you know, none of the content already exists elsewhere. Yahoo is trying to sell it as something that gets better over time, you know, much the way that Google search and these sorts of things track your usage.
Yes.
The idea is that if you used Yahoo service to browse news and sport and the like, that after a while, it would get better and better at recognizing that you are a 20-something male interested in gadgets versus a 15-year-old girl interested in Justin Bieber. But again, I fail to see how that's a compelling differentiating feature. There are so many other things that do it. And in fairness, Google does it well enough.
Better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the only real benefit, and also the, you know, how much of a benefit this is debatable, is that now users of Yahoo Mail, and I know that there are still a couple of 100,000 of those in South Africa, can now get their mail moved to a .co.za domain. But at the same time, you know, unless you set up forwarding from your old address, if you've been using a yahoo.co.uk or .com or whatever address for years, why would you go and change it?
Yeah,
it just doesn't make any sense. It's a very very peculiar move.
It seems to me that Yahoo's just come in here and they're not adding any value. They're not hiring journalists. They're not producing their own content. They simply want to cream skim advertising revenue.
They do. And they also, I got the impression talking to some of the people at the launch that they have realized that it's time to get a foothold in Africa.
Yes.
And South Africa is, for many people, the best place to start, or they assume so.
Mm.
And so they wanted to have some sort of presence here from which to expand into other African markets. Mm. But yeah, it just at the moment, it's very, very underwhelming, and I'll be amazed to to see how they do and what kind of traffic they're actually getting 6 months down the line.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. I mean, I don't know why anyone uses Yahoo anymore. I think the MySpace of online portals, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was promising at a point and then was rapidly overtaken and has never really caught up since.
Mm,
even the site itself looks... 1990s. It looks like it looks like a new site from 5 or 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's the sort of animations are slick and, you know, there's a little bit of your web 2.0 going on, but for the most part, the layout and so on, it looks like Alta Vista or IOL or any of those sort of sites did back in the day, with too much information and just generic news, really.
Yeah,
plus, as you said, it's only the news and the sports that's localized. You know, if you click on things like finance, you get the Dow Jones. And it seems peculiar that there are all these sections that they've left in place, but that simply route you back to their international sites anyway. And they've also said that they have no intentions of hosting anything locally at the moment either. So it really is just a token .co.za domain that doesn't really it's not going to make your experience any faster. And I really fail to see the point.
Indeed. Very disappointing, Yahoo. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break there. And after the break, we're going to come back and talk gadgets. So stay tuned.
After the advent of the telephone, it took mankind 70 years to invent the color television. And yet, it only took the next 23 years to invent lasers, the internet, to put a man on the moon.
Ignition sequence start.
It begs the question, what will the business world be like in the next 23 years? Wherever your business is at, Telkom Business will be there with you. Telkom Business.
Switchboard. Why, hey, Sunshine. Let me transfer you. Please hold. Switchboard. Why, I'm just Peachy. Thanks for asking. Please hold. Switchboard. Oh, dang. He's just stepped out of his office. Can I transfer you? Please hold. Bill! It's your wife!
Times have changed. So should your PBX. Get Virto from Vox Orion, a hosted IP PBX for your business, available from only 65 Rand per user per month. For more info, SMS your name to 45678.
And we'll call you.
Welcome back to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by South Africa's technology news leader at techcentral.co.za. I'm Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Craig Wilson. It's the end of the year. It's almost Christmas, a couple of days away. Craig, let's talk about some of the coolest toys and gadgets that have come across our desks this year. And I think we have to start with the one that arrived just a couple of days ago.
I was going to say, you kind of want to start with the one that's fresh in mind. And of course, those are the ones we've had most recently.
Yes.
Of course, we're talking about the Apple iPhone 4S, which... Some customers of a certain local operator are fuming about because they haven't been able to get them, and supposedly there is insufficient stock. We don't mean to rub your noses in it, but I'm afraid ours arrived without any hassle, mostly so that we could test it, of course.
From the other operator.
From the other operator that hasn't had the complaints, yes. And we've been having great fun playing around with it, and of course playing around with the big selling point. In fact, the selling point that puts the S in 4S, and that is Siri. Duncan, you've spent quite a lot of time in Siri's company lately.
I have.
Using and abusing her.
I think my girlfriend's been getting a bit jealous. But it's quite fun. I think it's a little gimmicky. It's got some great uses. I think if you want to dictate an email, it's not so great because you're going to have to go in and correct a lot of the mistakes it makes. But it's good, and I think with future iterations of Siri, it's going to become a powerful feature in this device. And I think you'll see the likes of Google and Microsoft playing catch up here and introducing similar services.
Well, indeed. And as someone who was clearly quite an Apple fan, commented on the review of the 4S we ran yesterday. It's going to get better and better too, because of course every time you do a Siri query, it goes back through.
Indeed.
To Apple's servers, and you know you also have to allow it access to all of your contacts and so on, so that it can link you're trying to say Jennifer with Jennifer in your phone book or whatever it is. And over time, as this database of lots and lots of personal information we're feeding to Apple grows and improves, I think we're going to find Siri works an awful lot better. The big problem, of course, is the limited functionality for South African users. We discovered pretty quickly that you can't search for local businesses. You can't say, where is my nearest pizzeria or my nearest pub?
Yes, that is actually a big challenge. And I think it does actually kind of cripple Siri in a way. I'm off to the US in a couple of weeks for CES in Las Vegas. And I'm really looking forward to trying out that functionality because, you know, you're in a foreign city. You want to do something. You want to find out where the nearest whatever is.
Indeed, that's when you most need the info. It seems the most useful. But I think we'll just give you an example, really, and give you the sort of error message it's likely to spit out at you if you try and ask it something it's not equipped to deal with.
Well, let's try that. Yes, let's have a bit of fun here. So I've just started up the phone. I see someone's trying to ring me. So hopefully we don't get interrupted here. But let's give this a go. So what you do is you hold down the home button on the iPhone 4S, and Siri pops up on your screen. Hello, Siri. Right, so it can manage those basic requests quite well. But so let's ask it where the nearest pizzeria is. Where is the nearest pizzeria?
Sorry, I can only look for businesses in the United States, and when you're using US English.
Which is a real pity. One hopes that that these services are going to come to other markets quite soon. I'd imagine it can't be that hard to do, especially if they integrate. And I don't know which service they're using to do this in the US, but if they were to integrate with Google Maps, they could do this fairly easily. And Google Maps is available with local business information. Admittedly, not very detailed business information at this stage, but certainly there is that information available, which they could tap into potentially.
Indeed, and it would be incentive for that people to improve that information. Mm. You know, even. Regular users always like putting info on about their favorite restaurants and that sort of thing. Mm. You can imagine that sort of database could grow really quickly.
Yes. So let's try a couple of other things. I'm going to try and send a text message now to Craig. So let's see how how it handles this. Send a text message to Craig Wilson.
What do you want to say to Craig Wilson?
Hello, Craig. We're recording a podcast here.
I updated your message. Ready to send it.
Now, it hasn't got that quite correct. Let me just pause that for a second. It says, hello, Craig. We're recording a podcast here. So let's cancel that and try it again.
Okay. I won't send it.
Send a text message to Craig Wilson.
What do you want to say to Craig Wilson?
Nice weather this afternoon, Craig, don't you think?
I updated your message. Ready to send it.
All right, it hasn't quite got that run right either. It now says, Laswell this afternoon, Craig, don't you think? Anyway, so as you can see, it doesn't work perfectly, possibly because of my South African English. I'm currently using the UK store, which I find the UK... voice service, which I found is the most accurate for my voice. Tried both the
you
American.
Found it to be a bit better, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's tell Siri to send that mistaken message. Send.
Okay, I'll send your message.
There we go, and it sent the message to Craig, whose phone should beep in a second to tell him that he's got a message.
And off it goes, yeah. The other thing we've had quite a lot of fun with, of course, is asking Siri some of the... And there we are, the message has arrived. Some of the silly questions that come to mind, you know, things like what is the meaning of life? And,
yeah, well, let's try a few
of those. Who made you? So maybe we'll show you a couple of those as well. Yeah.
What is the best smartphone?
Wait, there are other phones.
We haven't heard that one before. That was quite good. Where are you?
I'm not allowed to say.
Who made you?
Like it says on the box, I was designed by Apple in California.
What are we going to ask you? What is the meaning of life? What is the meaning of life?
Life, a principle or force that is considered to underlie the distinctive quality of animate beings. I guess that includes me.
As a few other funnies as well. We love you, Siri.
All you need is love and your iPhone.
We hate you, Siri.
I'm sorry.
Why are you sorry?
Is that what you think?
See, it doesn't always give the best answers, so I'm just going to talk randomly to it now and it'll probably bomb out.
Well, it's having the big thing.
Well, I suppose that's quite a bit of voice.
I don't understand.
There we go.
This doesn't always give the best answers, Samson Ag Talk Renovator Devil Bobby Barnard.
Okay. So it is quite easy to get it to descend into nonsense. But, you know, as you said, one of the most useful things has been for minor requests like, please set me an alarm for 30 minutes time, or, you know, please remind me of this, or move this meeting on my calendar to there.
Yeah.
For those sorts of things, it's surprisingly good.
In fact, let me do that, because I found that particularly useful over the last couple of days. Setting alarms, you want to remind yourself that you've put something in the oven, for example. You just, let's do this.
Particularly if your oven, like Duncan's, doesn't have a timer that works anymore.
Indeed. Set an alarm for 30 minutes from now.
Okay, I set it for 3:39 p.m.
There we go, perfect. Thank you, Siri.
I aim to please.
Right, so that's Siri, and I must say I'm very impressed with this device. Craig, you've also been playing with the iPhone 4S, and it's got a superb camera, doesn't it?
It does. In fairness, I've never had an iPhone before. I've never even had an iPod, which I probably shouldn't admit. But I've been absolutely astounded. You know, for a long time, I thought, particularly having sat and watched the 4S keynote to sort of try and write it up at the time, and, you know, generally being as underwhelmed as most other people and thinking, oh, this is just a minor incremental update. It really is a really stunning device, and I understand why they've proved so popular. You know, just from the moment you turn it on, it's just so easy to use. It feels so solid, so well made. As we've said, the screen, in fairness, feels a little bit small.
Yes, I agree.
Because of the number of Android phones that we've been using lately that have 4.3 or 4-inch or 5, or in the case of the Galaxy Note, 5.3-inch screens, you know, the Apple's starting to feel a little bit small in that sense.
Mm. Although I must say the Retina display, the high pixel density display that Apple uses in the iPhone offsets that to some extent.
It does. And the other thing I found is that it's incredibly responsive. You know, when I've typed an SMS with one hand, so I'm holding the phone in portrait orientation and you've got this sort of skinny keyboard, I find the accuracy is phenomenal and much better than the vast majority of Android phones I've used lately. I just find that, it seems to make the right corrections. It seems to realize when I, you know, have gone slightly skew and hit the wrong letter. And it's just a really, really pleasant experience to use. It is so simple. It's just phenomenal. And also that processor, I've found, at least in my use, you can really feel the difference between it and the iPhone 4. It's a lot snappier. Things just seem to happen almost instantly. You know, you push a button and it does what you say. All the transitions are seamless. It's just a really powerhouse device. But then, in fairness, particularly at its price point, it really should be.
Yeah, indeed.
You know, I mean, when you consider that the top of the range, the 64 gig, is a whopping 10,300 rand. You know, the device really had better be spectacular for that sort of price. I think the entry level 16 gig one is 776 or
76 on prepaid. Yeah, of course, the operators have some pretty aggressive tariff plans if you go into a 24-month contract.
Indeed. But you know, when you consider that as a cash price, it's costing you more than most iPads.
Yes, much more
for a device with a much smaller screen and a GSM antenna. It's a little bit baffling, but I understand why the fanboys rave as they do.
It's a great little device, and it's really well designed. I mean, I put it on my coffee table last night, and I was just looking at it, and it's really actually beautiful to look at. You can't often say that about a telephone.
No, indeed. And as I said, really, we should qualify this by saying we are not the biggest Apple fanboys.
Not at all. I'm a big Android fan. I'm probably my next phone will probably be a Windows Phone 7.5 device.
Indeed. And I've never had an iPhone before. So in fairness, we're probably some of the better judges because we don't have apples in our eyes. But it's just a really stunning piece of hardware.
And Craig, I really like it in white.
Yeah, so we've got one of each to play with at the moment.
Got a black one and a white one here.
And I'm a little bit jealous of Duncan's white one. I think it's the far better looking of the two.
Right, I won't go there.
Right. Devices, that is. Devices. Yeah,
thanks for clarifying. Right, so of course the iPhone 4S isn't the only really cool cell phone or smartphone that's come along this year. And I think there are
In fact, it's not
others.
Even the only one that's come along this week.
That's true. In fact, the other one that came along this week was the Samsung Galaxy Nexus, or the new Google phone.
You can't see the air quotes that he threw around Google phone there, but just know that they were there.
They were there. now, that's the first cell phone running, smartphone running ice cream sandwich, Android 4.0. And I must say, I'm blown away by it. It's really cool software.
I was going to say, just as the iPhone 4S is certainly, in our view, the finest iDevice or iPhone yet, I think there's no doubt that the Galaxy Nexus is the best Android device we've seen.
Yes, without a doubt. And it's got a beautiful 4.65 inch screen, with super AMOLED, and it's really a well-built device, and I was really loving it until I dropped it. From a not a particularly significant height, I dropped it onto a mole top kitchen counter from about, I'd say, 15 or 20 centimeters onto its corner, and a little hairline crack appeared at the bottom left of the screen, and the screen went black, and...
That's dead. The end of the Nexus,
That's
unfortunately.
The end of the Nexus, yeah. So I'd probably still be using it rather than this iPhone test review that I have at the moment. But yeah, it does appear to be a little fragile.
Which of course means I'd probably have the white iPhone to test, but we won't talk about that. this is the problem, though. Yeah, the Galaxy Nexus was great until that minor drop crippled it. And in fairness, it could have just been that it
could have been
just the wrong spot, you know. But in use, well, I mean, one of the things we really liked was that there were no. It doesn't have. It's done away with the physical buttons. There isn't even a home button of the sort that you find on the iPhone. All of the buttons are dynamic and on screen, and or soft buttons as they call them. And one of the bonuses of that is everything is usable in landscape or portrait orientation. Everything shuffles around accordingly. You know, with recent iterations of Android, it's now possible to resize widgets, and it's a lot more customizable, I felt, than previous versions of Android have been. And fortunately, Samsung have opted with the Galaxy Nexus to put on they call a vanilla version of Android, or one without the overlays that Samsung and HTC and the like.
What's Samsung's overlay called?
I think Samsung's is TouchWiz, and then HTC's is Sense, and HTC's is the only one we've really liked. But when it comes to the ice cream sandwich, well, what we saw of it, the overlays don't really seem necessary. Android, as Google intended it in this particular version, is great and clean and just a real pleasure to use.
I agree. And it's cheaper than the iPhone. Recommended retail price $6,999 versus the $7,699 plus for the iPhone 4S.
Indeed, and that is worth considering. Really, the Nexus, if you are an Android fan, is going to be the most desirable Android phone when it hits the market. Obviously, there's going to be a little bit of time now. We've been a bit spoiled by getting to play with it early.
Yes.
I believe it's not going to be out until sometime during the first quarter of next year. But it really is a phenomenal device, and I think it's going to further intensify the sort of Android iOS competition at the high end of the market.
Definitely. So if you're in the market for an ICS device, Android 4 device, I don't think you can do much worse than this thing. In fact,
no.
You can't. It is the only option right now. But if you're an Android fan and you want the latest and greatest Android device, then this is the one to go for. Just don't drop it.
Yeah. While we're on the topic of phones, Dan, we've seen a couple of other interesting phones this year.
Yeah. Well, while we're talking about Samsung, let's talk about their other big announcement this year. Well, they've had so many, but the big announcement, the big phone, the Samsung Note, Galaxy Note. I loved it. I loved it for the first day or two.
Yes.
And then I just decided the screen was too big.
And, you know, I felt similarly. I absolutely adored it. I thought this was the best phone I'd ever played with, and I was totally blown away. And then the honeymoon ended, and I realized that it was just too big in the pocket. You know, children were
too
pointing and
hand.
Laughing. It was definitely too big in the hand. And as a tablet user, I found that... You know, I personally favor the larger sort of 10-inch form factor tablets. I like a tablet I can type on with both hands. I'm not a big fan of the sort of 7-inch variety because they feel like big phones. And eventually that's what the Note felt like. It felt like a miniature tablet or an oversized phone, or as the Samsung users on their forums were calling it, the phablet. It was just too big.
I agree.
The stylus, you know, the stylus was... it was an interesting choice to bring a stylus back. You know, a lot of people, most notably Steve Jobs, who said something along the lines of, if you've got a stylus, you failed. You really shouldn't need anything more than your finger. Samsung tried to make the stylus a differentiating feature on the Note by allowing you to annotate pages and take screenshots of anything and send them fairly effortlessly. But really, unless you are the sort of person who doodles a lot, or I like to sketch over pictures of things, or you do that sort of creative work day to day. I think it's a feature, most people could use the phone for a year before even realizing there was a stylus in the base. It was by no means integral, and then it felt gimmicky, and I'm a bit over things that feel gimmicky. They've either got to serve a purpose, or they just shouldn't be there.
Yes.
I want things to be stripped down and uncluttered. I don't want additional features I'm never going to use. And yeah, the Note, that was part of the screen too. The screen just felt like too much.
I think there probably are users out there who'd absolutely love that form factor. At the same time, I think there are users like us who'd prefer to carry two devices. That this in between size just brings the disadvantages of a tablet that's too small and a phone that's too big.
Yeah, absolutely. But I know some people who swear by it.
I'm sure.
Who absolutely adore it. But for us, it was just a little too big. I think for that similar sort of, around the same time we played with Motorola's Razr, which didn't have the stylus or any of the other sort of silliness, and was, I think, a 4.3, possibly even 4.5. Yeah, 4.5-inch screen. And that was a stunning device.
That's a beautiful phone. Of course, when we say Motorola Razr, we're not talking about those...
The old clamshell.
The old clamshell from the early 2000s or late 1990s or whenever it was. We're talking about their new top-of-the-range Android smartphone.
And that is really, it's been one of the highlights of the Android sort of releases this year, I think, again. Yep. It's just been... It's an absolutely stunning device. And with... Google having taken over at Motorola to all intents and purposes, I think we're going to see some even more impressive devices from them next year.
Mm.
Between that and the Nexus, the beginning of next year is shaping up to really please Android fans and offer them far too much to choose from.
And Samsung really, this year really was the year of Samsung, wasn't it? The company
absolutely
just been booming. I seem to recall reading a report just the other day saying that they've sold more smartphones than Nokia.
Yes, I read that too. And they also said, the thing I've liked with Samsung is that they've just been willing to try all sorts of things. And they've released such a wide range of products. We had in the Galaxy range, for example, we had the Galaxy Geo, which was their equivalent of sort of the HTC Wildfire, a small Android phone, a little bit more compact, a little bit cheaper, a bit stripped down, but still quite good. Then we've seen the Galaxy S2, which I found the Galaxy Note, because it was too big, actually just made me realize how good a device the S2 was. Mm. In fairness, much like the Galaxy Tab 10.1, I understand why Apple got so upset.
Mm.
The S2 looks uncannily like an iPhone.
You mean an iPad?
I mean the S2 phone does look quite a lot like an iPhone. The screen and the sort of single button, although it's a slightly different shape beneath it. But what a fantastic device. The Note just made me love the S2 even more.
Yes.
Because it seemed to have almost all of the functionality in what I consider a normal-sized sort of phone package.
I think it's one other thing that we should mention about the Note, and that is its retail price, recommended retail price of 9,000 Rand.
Jeez, yeah.
So for that price, you could get yourself a very decent Android smartphone and a very decent...
tablet.
A tablet, an iPad or whatever.
Absolutely,
For the same price, if not maybe slightly more.
Indeed.
Than the cost of the Note. So that's also worth...
And if you're in the sort of market to spend 9,000 Rand on a phone... It's also, a lot of people are going to opt for things like a 32-gig iPhone 4S.
Yes.
It's very difficult at that end of the market to really convince people to go for your product instead. It's just too much.
Mm.
I mean, that is just far too much for a handset.
Mm.
But Samsung definitely the most incredible year. And when we think back to a few years ago and when sort of flat panel displays started becoming popular... It's now difficult to find anyone who works in computing who hasn't or doesn't own at least one or two Samsung monitors. They've just completely dominated that market and are doing incredibly well in the phone space.
Indeed. There are two other phones which I think we must touch on, both of them from Nokia.
Indeed.
The first is the Nokia N9, which ran Mego. Mego.
Yeah, it still does, yes.
Probably the last Nokia phone that's going to run Mego, which is the operating system collaboration between Nokia and Intel. and formed the basis, or the hardware basis, for Nokia's first or top-end Windows phone device, the Lumia,
the Lumia range.
Lumia 800, which apparently has not been selling very well.
No, indeed. I see the early figures suggest that it hasn't been. What I'd be interested to see is how the Nokia, the Lumia 710, which is the slight step down from the 800 flagship, to see how that performs, because if I remember, it was quite a lot cheaper.
Yes.
It was marketed as 50 or 60 euros cheaper than the 800.
Yes.
Which on a sort of 250, 300 euro device is quite a bit. And yeah, it's strange to see that it's doing so poorly. I mean, Nokia have clearly pulled out all the stops.
Yeah.
I had the pleasure of going to Nokia World in London, where they unveiled these phones, and you know, it was incredible the amount of money they'd spent on marketing, and you see there were enormous campaigns planned for the next few months. But then there were some problems with the plan, really. Initially, it was launching in a handful of European countries before slowly being rolled out elsewhere. And one of the first things a lot of the analysts there asked was, why are they not launching in the States?
Yeah.
They were just saying, you know, surely if you want to go after Samsung and Apple, that's the market you need to start in, because a lot of other markets also take their cues from the US. Mm-hmm. And it just seems peculiar that they wouldn't launch there from the get-go.
It does, yeah. And I wonder why. I mean, the figures I was looking at in the UK, it's not even in the top 10 smartphone devices in this pre-Christmas period. I wonder if it's just consumers don't trust Microsoft anymore. I mean, maybe they remember all the horrible mess that Windows Mobile was.
Sure.
Maybe there's just they just haven't had the exposure to this great new operating system that Microsoft has produced. And really, I mean, anyone who's played with it says, "Well, this is wonderful. It's possibly the best
mobile
device around."
Yeah.
So I wonder if there's just a perception problem here around Microsoft.
And I think in that end of the market, a perception problem potentially around Nokia. You know, Nokia has continued to move hundreds of millions of handsets in the sort of feature phone and the entry level markets, and will continue to do so.
Yes.
But at the high end of the market, people don't talk about Nokia smartphones at the moment.
Maybe consumers are just taking a wait and see approach.
I think that has a lot to do with it. You know, if I was looking for a smartphone now, despite even what I know about the Lumia, I don't think it would come to mind. You know, I'd think of Samsung and HTC and Apple, because to my mind, those are the smartphones I see the most often, that I have the most feedback from other people on. And this is one of the great challenges Nokia's going to have to face, is to get back into the minds of that sort of level of user.
High end of the market, where the margins are, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But as you said, I mean, the devices I got to play with both of the Lumias, albeit briefly, at Nokia World, and they were just phenomenal. Nokia have always made really good hardware, especially on the high end. It's just a wonderful device, clean, you know, really simple interface. That's obviously got more to do with the Windows Phone 7 running on it. But just really, really nice devices. They feel properly sturdy, wonderfully well made. The screen feels a little bit curved on the edges, a bit like a sort of meniscus on a glass of water.
It is curved, isn't it?
Ever so slightly, yeah. But it just feels like a really, really stunning piece of hardware. And in use, it was an absolute pleasure.
Yes.
In fairness, though, I have discovered playing with other Windows devices that, you know, unlike Apple, where you can trick it into thinking you've got an account in a different market, it doesn't seem possible to do that without quite a lot of effort.
Okay.
When you sign up for Microsoft Live or whatever the account is they make you sign up for.
Right.
And I was very frustrated the other day to find that an app I wanted that is free, and free in Android and iOS, was free on Windows Phone 7, but I couldn't download it because of my region.
Oh, interesting.
And it wasn't a particularly specific app at all. And I've never had a problem on any other operating system. And I thought, you know, this sort of thing could also be a problem. What we don't know yet is just how many of the apps are actually going to be available to South Africa consumers, and what's going to be a problem, and what sort of workarounds they're going to be. And, you know, so much of that groundwork has already been done for local Android and iOS users.
You're right.
This is another problem, because unfortunately people who are, well, not all of them, but a fair percentage of people who are willing to spend that kind of money on a phone, want to get stuck in and want to be able to do a lot with it. And if they think there are going to be compatibility issues or problems getting the apps they used to use on another platform, that's a very, very big reason not to go for the brand you aren't sure of.
Indeed.
I think it's going to be very difficult for Microsoft and Nokia to win back the smartphone market.
Indeed. Make or break here for both companies, I think.
Indeed, but exciting times for us to watch it as it happens.
Indeed. Good. I think that's those are the phones that really grabbed us this year. Craig, I think we've just put up a review this morning of this product called the Mighty Dwarf, but I think it bears just a quick repeat of how cool this thing is. What is it?
So it's a sort of about half the size of a Coke can, not quite as thick, and it's basically a multimedia speaker that's sort of pocket sized. But Duncan and I had great fun playing with it. You know, once in a while you get something that just really amazes you and you go, well, good Lord, how does that work? And the Mighty Dwarf is one of those. It's essentially, I mean, it feels like an enormous magnet, but I actually checked it against things the other day for fear of wiping hard drives. And I don't think it is a magnet, actually. I don't know what's going on in there. But it's something heavy, something feels like it actually feels like it could be made out of lead. But I think actually perhaps it has something to do with the way it works, that it needs to be quite weighty. It has a sort of gel pad on the base of it, which has a sticker over it that you peel off. And you then pop it on any sort of surface, a wooden table, a glass coffee table, a countertop, and it just produces the most incredible sound.
And you get different sound depending on the surface you put it on.
Indeed, yeah. And we found generally that you know, wooden surfaces, especially large tables and that sort of thing, provide the best sound. But it really is a sort of surround sound experience from this one little can-like device.
Yes,
it's just amazing. You know, there are a couple of problems with it. You know, the initial amazement of the sound quality is great, but in terms of actual usability, you know, it's charged via mini USB, not micro USB like phones. And you know, mini USB is becoming less common. You see it on sort of external hard drives, but you know, it's not that common for peripherals anymore. And in order to plug in a you know, your phone or something with a 3.5mm jack, you have to use this 3.5mm to mini USB cable, which is far from ideal. And, you know, there's no visual controls on it. So you can play music off an SD card or a micro SD, should I say, slotted into the side. But, you know, if you've got 4 gigs worth of music, you can't just skip between them and know what you're getting. So, you know, I think it could do with a little bit of refinement. But just in terms of sheer novelty factor, it's the kind of thing you want to pull out at a party. People will love it. Mm,
it's very cool. Go and check out the review on the website. I was thinking of actually putting it on the table here and demonstrating it while we record, but I just realized the whole table is going to vibrate and it's going to affect the microphone. So let's start.
So you're going to have a look at the review instead. Just yeah, we've got a video there.
Absolutely. So we're finally starting to see the first Ultrabooks coming into the market. These are the Intel-based, Windows-based competitors to the MacBook Air. It's amazing how long they've taken. But we've seen the Acer Aspire S3, which Craig, you took a look at. I think indeed, you were generally pretty impressed with it.
I was, yeah.
Then we've got the U300S, which has come out. We're still waiting for our review unit. It's supposed to have been here on Monday. I'm really looking forward to seeing that one. I think that actually may be my next laptop. Especially it's a beautiful machine. If you Google Lenovo U300S and look for the tangerine. What's it called? The tangerine orange or something model. It really does look like a sexy machine. I've been trying to avoid the temptation of buying a MacBook Air, moving back towards Windows as much as possible. I don't know why I'm doing that, but
I don't know either, but I'm all right with it.
Flavor of the month. So yeah, there's some great machines coming out, and I'm off to CES in a couple of weeks, as I mentioned earlier in the show. So I'm expecting to see a lot of those Ultrabooks on show there, and hopefully some Windows 8 demonstration tablets as well.
Indeed. I think in terms of the Ultrabook space, the main things we've seen that have been problematic on the few we've played with is some of them that have the features you want, like USB 3 ports and some of the sort of future-proofing, that seems to push them into too high a price bracket. And then some of the ones that are sort of better priced but lack some of those features tend to have poor battery life.
Yes.
And I think, you know, that's one of the things that I've seen the MacBook Air coming up on numerous top tens for the year, and for a lot of people calling it their the best device. And, you know, it's the same with a lot of the tablets. It's one of the things you just can't, whether you like Apple or you hate Apple, they make devices with great battery life. And that's something that a lot of other people
except arguably for the iPhone.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, except for the iPhone, and eventually those batteries die, and then they're hellish expensive to replace.
Yes.
But you know, out of the box, it's really, really hard to find any device that could compete, particularly in the Ultrabook range, with the enormous battery life that the MacBook Air offers. Mm. It's just phenomenal, and that is really the sort of Achilles heel that the other manufacturers have got to find a workaround for.
But I'm sure 2012 is going to bring us some really exciting looking Ultrabooks. And I must say, I'm looking forward to playing with Windows 8 when it comes out. Probably, I think they're suggesting third quarter of next year now.
Well, especially since, you know, but we've been playing a little bit with the the very, very buggy, understandably, developer preview. Mm. But, you know, from what we've seen, it looks set to be great on a tablet or other touch device. You know, the developer edition in particular certainly is not suited to a traditional keyboard and mouse setup.
No.
It looks like it could really, really shake things up in the tablet space. And it's just going to be great to have an OS that can run across so many different platforms and devices.
The beta, of course, of Windows 8 is coming out in February, and I think then we'll start to get a really clear, much clearer picture of where Microsoft is going with this operating system. The developer preview really missed a lot of features and stuff, so I think once the full beta is out in the market, we'll get a much clearer idea of where Microsoft is going with this operating system, and we can start to speculate on how successful it's going to be, both in the enterprise and consumer markets.
Indeed.
Good. Then our next product, which I really had to pick, is a locally manufactured device. I've already got one of these, but this is a new one, which is a gift for someone. It's the Mediator. It's actually fantastic. I've got the small entry level one, which doesn't support the inclusion of a SATA hard drive inside it. But this is the big baby. It's made by a mid-range company called Sanji Electronics. And you can insert a SATA hard drive up to 3 terabytes inside the device. It's got all sorts of amazing ports, including a USB 2 port, a USB 3 port, HDMI 1.3 output, everything you could possibly need to watch your Creative Commons content. it supports just about every video and audio format you can imagine. I'm just looking at the box here: AVI, BD, MV, BDISO. I haven't even heard of some of these.
MKV,
which is an important one, of course.
H.264s.
Yeah, MP4, MOVE, VOB, ISO files.
It even supports real media files or something.
It even supports Adobe Flash video files. which is quite astonishing. So an amazing device. I'm looking forward to installing this for the person I've bought it for. But a really cool device, made locally, and it's cheap. I got this on a local website called simplicity.co.za. Quite impressed with their service. It cost only 1,700 rand and came bundled with a free high-speed PCI Express Wi-Fi router and a USB 2.4 gigahertz wireless QWERTY keyboard. Which is fantastic because this thing accesses social media networks, you can browse the web with it, etc. So if you're looking for a home media player and a locally made one at that, I can highly recommend the Mediators. Well, this is the very latest model. It's called the MED 500 X2. So go check that out.
We'll hopefully have a review of it in the new year.
Indeed we will. So let's get on to tablets. We've touched on them a little bit, but we're having a bit of a debate before the show about what should be the greatest tablet of the year. And of course, there's the Samsung Galaxy Tab 10.1, which we think is the best
hardware.
It's the best hardware. It's the best Android tablet out there.
Yep.
There's really been a whole range.
We've got to be careful there because owners of the Asus Transformer would disagree. A lot of people I've spoken to have said, no, the Samsung is not the finest Android tablet.
The Samsung Transformer is that sort of...
Under the Asus combined, Transformer, yeah.
I beg your pardon, slip of the tongue, is that one that sort of doubles as a PC.
Well, indeed, although in fairness, the keyboard you do actually have to purchase separately, so it's not obligatory, but it's one of the big selling points.
And it runs Windows and Android. If I'm not mistaken,
I'm not sure.
I think it runs Windows when you dock it, and then it runs. I'm pretty sure of that. Yeah, and then you take the tablet out, and it becomes an Android.
Either way, I mean, I've played with one of those too, and it is phenomenal. Mm. And one of the bonuses of that dock is that, you know, you then get about sort of 16 hours of life. But yes, it really has been the year of the tablet, and I think the three that really deserve the most attention and have certainly gotten the most attention from the public and the media have been obviously the iPad 2, Samsung's Galaxy Tab 10.1, and most recently the Amazon Kindle Fire. Which was launched just in time to make its way into many an American stocking for Christmas.
But not so much here,
no. And as anyone will know, if you've read our review of the Kindle, you know, the Kindle, as you said, it's one of those that looks great on paper, and we certainly understand why it's being, you know, it's set to do so well in the US. It's just, with the content offerings that Amazon has, it's a really compelling offering, particularly at a fairly diminutive price of $200. But the problem is, outside of America, you have to work really hard to make all of that content work. And that really is the biggest crippling factor. Plus, I feel it's a little bit disingenuous calling it a Kindle. I know they just wanted to keep the sort of brand line together. But, you know, when you say Kindle, I think e-ink. And it's not a Kindle, it's a tablet.
So, Greg, here's the question for you. If you were to go out and buy a tablet for this Christmas, assuming you didn't really own a plethora of tablets, what would you buy?
Well, actually, I can answer this quite literally. This needn't be an imaginary instance. I did buy someone a tablet for Christmas, and I bought them an iPad.
Okay.
For the very simple reason that the Samsung may be... actually, I can tell you this because she doesn't listen. I bought an iPad for my mom. And the reason I bought an iPad is because...
Your mom doesn't listen to the show?
She doesn't.
Shocking.
At least if she does, I bet she doesn't listen this far into it. And I bought it for her because it's my mom. My mom doesn't care how good the screen res is. She doesn't care, you know, what sort of processor it's running. She just wants it to be easy to use. And I think, as we've said in a lot of our reviews, and as a lot of other people have said, and you're welcome to disagree with us, the Galaxy Tab is by far the finest hardware. If you want to mess around with its innards and get really stuck in, that's the device for you. But if you just want a device that works, it's very, very difficult to beat the iPad. You know, even after having it being out for as long as it has been and the number of other devices that have come out on top of it, you know, Android for phone and Android for tablet are not quite the same experience. And Android on tablet, to my mind at least, is still too cluttered. It's not intuitive enough. It's not simple enough. And you just can't beat the iPad on that basis.
That's true. I think we may see some big changes next year, though, with ice cream sandwich tablets coming out. And I see Google, Eric Schmidt, the chairman of Google, hinted very strongly a couple of days ago that they're going to be introducing a Google-branded tablet, ice cream sandwich tablet, during Indeed. 2012. So almost the same strategy as with the Samsung Galaxy Nexus, a Google-branded tablet.
Indeed, I think there's no reason to believe that at Apple's amazing dominance in the tablet market will become the kind of dominance it's had with the likes of the iPod. You know, I think there are too many competitors in the tablet space for it to maintain that stranglehold forever.
True.
But I think right now, at the end of 2011, if I was buying a tablet, which I've done, or if I was advising anyone else to, depending who you're buying it for, for 90% of users, the iPad remains the best tablet out there.
In fact, let me weigh in there as well. If I didn't already have a tablet or several tablets, I would, and I had to make a choice of one tablet, I would also buy the iPad too.
Yep.
Right. Moving on. I think just very briefly, we were just chatting a bit about what the best televisions this year were. I think there is only one, so we're not going to dwell on this for very long. But if you've got the cash burning in your pocket, and it's a lot of cash, the Samsung, and it's a bit of a mouthful of a name, the UA55C9000 55-inch LED LCD TV is the best TV we have ever seen. So if you've got 50 grand to spare, or 55 grand, or whatever it is now.
And many, many weekends of your life to spare.
Yes. Go and buy one. It's very cool. We really are running rapidly out of time. So, Craig, I think just before we wrap up, this isn't a specific product, but I think you wanted to chat a little bit about one of the coolest developments in camera technology this year, and that was mirrorless cameras. What that is.
We'll talk about this fairly briefly, right? So, you know, if you look at your SLRs, your big single lens reflex cameras, the digital ones, or the old school sort of film bodies, you'll remember they have a sort of 45 degree mirror in them. And that is so that the image coming through the lens, which is where the name single lens reflex comes from, is that the image coming through the lens is the same image you see in the viewfinder. The 45 degree mirror, much like a periscope on a submarine, it just projects that same image up through a pentaprism and into your eye. The problem is, or one of the problems with mirrored cameras, is firstly they're big, because you have to have enough space to put the mirror in the box in front of the sensor or in front of the film and not have it interfere with the back of the lens. The other problem is every time you take a picture, that mirror has to get out of the way. And when it gets out of the way, there's a bit of what they call mirror slap. And there's a little bit of a vibration through the through the camera, and obviously any vibrations affect image quality. So for a long time, the only time you've found sort of mirrorless cameras has been in cell phone cameras or in compact cameras. But in the last year and a little bit, but mostly this year, what we've seen is almost all of the big manufacturers coming to the party with mirrorless cameras. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to build the functionality of a full-size digital SLR into a compact camera, but one that has interchangeable lenses. So you get the perks of an SLR with the portability of a compact. And we've now seen there's a lot out there. There's, you know, Olympus have got their pen. Nikon have, I forget what it's called. I think it's called the P1. Pentax have released the Pentax Q. There's a lot of these coming out, and it really is the most exciting development that we've seen in photography, arguably since the advent of digital sensors. What we're going to see is cameras getting smaller and smaller without sacrificing image quality. And what we're also finding, though, with these mirrorless is that the traditional viewfinder is slowly disappearing. You know, it is still nice that a lot of serious photographers like to have it, but increasingly on these compacts, what you're finding is that the rear display is becoming the main tool for composing shots.
Interesting.
But we're going to see a lot more of this next year. It's a space that's growing. Sony, in particular, their NEX system has been performing incredibly well and selling very well. I think what we're also going to see is there is at the moment only one full-size mirrorless camera, and that's made by the ever wallet-crippling Leica. no one else at the moment makes a full-size mirrorless camera, and I think before the middle of next year, you'll see a lot of the bigger players coming to market with those.
Good. Well, if you're looking for a camera to go with that 55-inch Samsung TV, then the Leica is probably for you.
Yes.
We really are out of time, so I think we're going to sign off there. The show, thanks to all of our readers and advertisers and listeners throughout the year on Tech Central, and we hope you have a fantastic holiday break. We'll be back in the new year. I'm off to the US to go to CES to check out all the latest gadgets and stuff, so look out for my reporting from there.
And by the looks of your schedule, there'll be rather a lot of it.
Yes, indeed, and a lot of keynotes. Eric Schmidt, Steve Ballmer, et cetera, et cetera. So I think there's going to be, my diary's packed with interviews and meetings and press conferences. So
there'll be plenty for you to read while you're trying to avoid work in that first week back in January or the second week back. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Good. Well, I'm trying to avoid work as well. Great. Well, we won't be publishing between Christmas and New Year this year, so... unless, of course, something major happens, but I don't think anything will happen. I think everyone's away at their holiday homes already.
And even if it does, there won't be that many people around to read about it.
Indeed. But if it happens, we'll publish.
We'll publish.
Yeah. So from myself and Craig Wilson, from Craig Wilson and myself, Duncan MacLeod, we hope you have a great holiday and drive safely, and we'll see you in the new year. Cheers. Mm-hmm.